You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with The Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I've got Glenn Schwarm. Glenn, how you doing?
Good, Ken. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Sure. Thanks for having us.
Glenn is a fellow blogger for Bigger Pockets. Him and I have both blogged for Bigger Pockets for a number of years. So we've known each other's names, just never had a chance to really sit down and talk. So I'm looking forward to the interview. He is he's actually the owner and co-owner. Him and his wife both own Signature Home Buyers out of New York. And what market in New York are you guys in?
We're in the Albany area, about 2.5 hours north of the city. We're actually the capital region of New York.
Okay. So you guys have the extra cold winters up there.
Yeah, don't even talk about it. We're not looking forward to that. That's starting soon. So yeah, we don't like that.
Are you guys, I guess, in the throes of fall right now? I mean, I bet you probably have some pretty awesome leaf changes going on.
You know, we are. Yeah, fall. Yeah, I don't get too excited about fall because I just mean winter's coming very soon. So we're more summer beach ocean people. That's really what we love.
I gotcha. And so but your primary business is flipping houses, but you also do some buy and hold. And it looks like you started about 2007. So just really about the same time I did. I started 2005, but right as the market was crashing. So maybe take us back. Tell us the story. How did you get into real estate, especially right as things were kind of crashing?
So maybe let me take it back a little further, just so you know. I worked for myself since I was 19, right? So I'm 47 right now. I feel old, but I was 19. I started my own company. I had a security and alarm company. And around that same time, it was in the late 80s. I bought an online real estate seminar up middle of the night, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And bought this seminar and never did anything with it. I actually made a couple offers and never really did anything with it. And it kind of went in the back burner. However, it was always on my topic of discussion. I had friends who were, you know, renovating houses and keeping them as rentals. And they'd ask me for advice. I always had good creative ideas, but I never did it myself. And if you know me and spend time with me as a friend, you'd know that that's not my normal MO. Man, normally if I wanted to do something, I do it. And for some reason, fear held me back terribly over the years. And even my wife at the time, my first wife, she finally bought me another online seminar one time. The I can't think what his name is, Carlton Sheets.
I love Carlton Sheets. He's the one that got me into the business, man.
Okay. So she bought me one of those and said, now, you know, will you shut up and stop watching the same infomercial? Here it is. And I ended up, we actually bought a coaching course from him and started to learn on rentals, that kind of stuff. So kind of fast forward, I own that, my security company. I sold it in my mid-30s. I was then a top network marketer in two companies for about 10 years. That's all I did for a living. And all of a sudden, around the same time we started the business, I was going through a divorce from my wife. And so that's a real tough time. We're still great friends, have two awesome kids together and all that. But I met Amber. And Amber was also going through a divorce at that time. So very difficult time in our lives. But we kind of found a niche with each other. And what I mean is I love putting the deals together, finding the deals, figuring out how things work, you know, making it all come together. She loves design. She always says, you know, I love taking things that are ugly and making them beautiful. And I always tell her that I'm like a work in progress for her, you know. So it's got a long ways to go. But so when we got started in the business, the funny part is we went to a local seminar. And it was on flipping houses. And this is, again, 2007. When everybody was saying run for the hills in real estate, we were kind of jumping in. And like I was telling you before, you know, some people say, wow, you got it in a really good time. You know, you must have had some really good foresight. I said, no, I didn't have any foresight. It wasn't from being brilliant. It was out of being purely desperate. You know, I was $80,000 in credit card debt, just got amassed from, going through divorce and that kind of stuff. And so my wife and I, or my, not my wife, I'm sorry, Amber and I decided to go to a seminar. We weren't married at the time. She's my wife now. And so we went to this little seminar, and there was probably 8 people in the room. And Amber and I sat in the front row, and this guy was talking, and it was kind of an annoying guy. And he said, you know, to be successful in real estate, you're going to have to go in houses that she'll never go in. And he's pointing at my wife, who, now you have to know my wife. She's beautiful. She's a beautiful blonde woman. She's 100 pounds soaking wet. And he kind of made fun of her like she wouldn't go in those houses. And we kind of looked at each other, and I thought, buddy, you have no idea what you just did. Oh, but no. He stirred her up. You know, she didn't say anything. We remained quiet. But we went on to dominate our market, and now we're the leaders, and we've flipped over 300 houses here in the Capital Region. We've just bought our 54th house this year. We've got 3 months left to go.
Nice.
So we're hoping for over 70, you know, purchases of new houses. Most of them are flips. We've kept about a dozen of them for rentals. But, you know, it's really been an amazing journey for us so far, and we keep building and keep building.
So you guys come out of this seminar and she's all geared up, like, you're not going to tell me I'm not going to get in a house. And you guys, what did you do next? How did you start buying and flipping?
So very shortly thereafter, our first deal came in. I was still actually living home with my soon to be ex-wife, and I was good friends with my mail carrier. And I let her know. I said, if you know any vacant houses, let me know. This is kind of a good lead or a good tip for somebody.
Sure.
So, you know, mail carriers know a lot. They know a lot about us. They know who gets what mail, you know, especially if it's not good mail.
Yep.
So, and some of them are gossips. So she came around one day and we were just kind of just talking outside my house. And I said, we're looking to buy any houses if you know of any. Well, I actually was in the shower and she came knocking the door and told my wife at the time. She said, hey, tell Glenn there's a house up the road. I actually came out. I actually jogged up the road because I was so excited to meet people. And I walked in and there was a couple. They were probably in their 80s and they were cutting out a sink out of a countertop. Now, if you've ever done the work, you know that's, you know, pretty complicated, tedious work. And it had to be 85 degrees outside. And I was covered in sweat by the time I got there. And I said, hey, would you guys be open to selling the house? They put down the countertop and we started to talk. Now, long story short, we bought the house. We were at the closing table a few weeks later, and we were, you know, making this all come together. And I said to the woman, I said, can I ask you something? I said, at what point did you decide to sell to us? And she said, the minute you walked in that door. And so we laughed because they were, you know, they were doing the hard work. So we bought the house. We did all the renovations ourselves except for the floor refinishing. And we did it with blood, sweat, tears. We almost killed each other through the process, literally. And we end up selling the house for, you know, I think we made around $16,000 or $17,000 in profit. And that process took us into 2008. So really, we didn't flip our first house until 2008. When I first got started, Ken, you may remember, there used to be a thing called no-doc loans. Remember those?
Oh, yeah. That's why we got in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. So, and that's how I bought the first house. And actually, the third house was the same way. The second house was the same way. So the second house we bought was in the same neighborhood, about two doors down from where I lived. And this was it went on the market and the neighbors, you know, we got talking. Turns out I knew the sellers and they gave me the inside tip and said, look, this is a stressful situation and we want to get out. Now, Amber and I had just made around 17 grand. The funny part of that story is we were down, mind you, I was $80,000 in credit card debt going into this deal. I had good credit, but I was $18,000 or $80,000 in credit card debt. Now, I then, through that process, we got done with that house. We hadn't sold it yet. We were down to our last $1,500 anywhere. So, I mean, between cash, credit, you know, I don't care, poker chips in the closet, whatever you had.
Wow.
We were down. We had one more month or a half a month to survive before it was going to get ugly. And so we had to sell. So we sold that house, made that 17 grand. Went off and bought the second house, right? We heard of an inside deal. We heard that they would take, you know, let's say it was 80,000 or whatever the deal was. So Amber and I put our work clothes on again, and this time we took a more strategic approach. And we worked for 33 days. We had 15-hour days every day. We did not miss a day of work. Went through and we renovated that house top to bottom. I have to tell you, I'm not a skilled craftsman. I'm just a guy that had to have a better future for himself. So I was pushed by motivation, not by skill. I just figured out the skill. I asked people I knew or friends to come help or call my buddies I grew up with and say, you know how to do tile? Well, come show me. You know, so that's what we did, and you know, a lot of free labor. So the whole time this process, neighbors were coming over and they were really impressed with what we were doing. They were bringing us dinner and that kind of stuff. So it was great. So we sell that house in a multiple bid situation. Now, mind you, this is mid-2008. Wow. So literally the market is tanking.
Yeah.
And everybody's saying, don't do real estate, don't do real estate. And we put that house in the market, had multiple bids, over asking, went 2,000 over asking, and we sold that house. One of the coolest things, I have to tell you the story, there's this neighbor across the street, they're probably in their, I'd say, late 60s, mid to early 70s. And they watched us through this whole process. And she comes over during the open house, And she said, there's a bunch of people around, and you have to picture the woman. She's in her 70s, kind of a small lady. And she says, you know what you two have? We said, what is that? She goes, you two have balls. And just, you know, that's coming awesome. Out of her mouth, it was funny. You know, a guy right, is talking totally. In the locker room, it's one thing. But, you know, when she said that, we started laughing, and we said, wow. And she's, and the more we've thought about that, we thought, yeah, I guess we do. You know, we didn't think of it that way. We just had desperation. Well, we sold that house. We made about $36,000 profit during the process of the house, I should tell you. My wife, Amber at the time, we weren't married yet, but we were almost out of money for the renovation. Remember, we could get the loan, but we had to do the renovation out of our own pocket. Mm-hmm. And so my wife had a Mercedes that had $10,000 in equity in the car. So we sold the car and lived on one car. We had multiple kids and a lot of stuff going on. And she sold that car, and it was a tough time for her, but we said, we have to do what we have to do. And she sold that car, and we used that money to finish off the renovation. So like I said, we made $36,000. I looked at my wife and said, this is fun. I said, we could do this again. And that's kind of how it began. And the next time, you know, the next house we bought, we found ourselves with two houses at the same time. And that's sort of how things started to expand from there.
Unbelievable, man. Down to your last $1,500, and you're like, let's keep doing this.
We were there, man.
That's amazing. and at the middle of the downturn, 2008, golly, just had stock market had just crashed. I mean, everything looked pretty bleak.
Everybody, yeah, you know, it's funny. When you have blinders on and you don't know better, you don't know better. You know, it's almost like if you don't pay attention to everything going on around, even as bad as that was in the economy and the world and everything, if you have to provide for your family, it's amazing what you can do despite what everybody tells you you can't do.
Yeah, totally. So, and you figured out how to lay tile and become a handyman, basically.
Yeah, don't do that anymore. But I did for the first few houses.
You know, it's funny. I interviewed somebody yesterday, Jordan Fisher. We had the same conversation. You know, the first couple houses, I think it makes sense to get out there and get your hands dirty and understand what it is to renovate a house. Because then going forward, when you hire people, you know what to expect and they can't take advantage of you because you've done it before.
Yeah, you do. You do have appreciation. My one friend who used to do tile for me, I say, man, you're slow. And he's like, listen, will you shut up? And I'm like, well, you know, you are. I love you, but we grew up together. But, you know, he's like, so finally I went to do it myself and said, holy crap, you're not so bad after all. You know, you gain perspective, right, when you get your hands dirty a little bit. So that's not a bad way to start, for
totally.
Sure.
Yeah. But eventually, yeah, when you want to start scaling at all, you know, your time is much more valuable out there finding additional houses than it is swinging a hammer.
Absolutely. Yeah, towards the end here, I'm going to tell you a story that'll grip your heart a little bit about systems and why that's important in our businesses.
Well, that's a good segue. So let's talk about how you guys are finding your properties up there in Albany.
We do. We have a pretty good marketing machine that's going right now. Believe it or not, we get about 15 to 18 deals a year off of bandit signs. I am not a big fan of those things. I think they're a little bit cheesy, but I tell you, the volume that we get of calls, I can't really argue with them, you know?
Yeah.
Now, we have a system that works off of, so I don't go out and put signs up. We hire people that go out. We have routes. They go through an app online. And they keep track of their routes. We've got like 8 or 9 routes, and they just go through and make sure our signs are up. We battle with code enforcement and all that good stuff. So it's all kind of part of the game, you know. So
sure. What app do you use? I'm just curious.
I think Route to Me or Route. Gosh, I don't. So I have an operations manager that handles all those details, and she's kind of set that all up. But it's a routing software.
Yep.
And that's and she can plot and route things right there. So that's how we keep track of that.
Cool. And what do you pay? I'm just curious. What do you pay per sign?
We don't. Our guys get an hourly wage. They get, I think it's $10 an hour plus mileage. And then they get a bonus of $100 for every house that we buy.
Oh, that's cool.
Off a sign. Yep. We've got two guys that are out putting signs out.
Nice.
So that's one method. We do a fair amount of direct mail. We have a system we've kind of developed that goes after, we call them the obits, but the obituaries. Yep. In our state, you can't just buy probate leads. I don't know if your state can, if you can just buy probate leads.
Yep.
Well, in New York, you can't. They're not available. So they're very difficult to get your hands on. So we've developed a system. We actually have a company, I think in Indonesia, or one of those, you know, outsourced companies that goes through the obituaries and all the papers. Then they pre-sort them, they do their thing, then they send the list up to us. We scrub the list and do a mailer. So that's, we do that. Plus we do a lot of referral work. We network with, you know, everything from billing departments to contractors to flea market people to clean out guys. We send letters to them on a quarterly basis. We send to attorneys. We just stay in front of everybody so that when the time is right, they know who to call. So that's a big one. Hmm. Our office is on a road called Altamont Avenue in Rotterdam, and we get around 20 to 30,000 cars a day that go by, and we took the ugliest house on the block. I mean, it was god awful. People thought it should be a teardown, and we turned it into a beautiful office. And now we have a huge sign out front that says we buy houses on it, has our logo and our number. And we've probably purchased, this has been our first year, at least 8 houses this year just off that alone. So
wow, killer.
I think that, you know, providing or building a solid reputation is key. I think if you want to flip a couple houses, that's one thing. If you want to go and start doing 40, 50, 100, you have to have a good reputation because people will know who you are. And if you're a scumbag and you screw people and you're always out to get everybody and get every dollar for yourself, you're not going to last long, in my opinion. You'll probably do a couple deals here and there, but I don't think you'll be a consistent player to be reckoned with. I think if you do it right, do it with integrity, honesty, and character, I think you can really go a long way. That's my opinion.
Yeah,
how
I agree 100%. Well, and I think that the industry is smaller than most people think, especially if you're in a smaller town. But even in a big town like Atlanta, which is where I am, I know most of the big players. And if you start screwing people, you're just going to end up hurting your business. You have to operate with integrity.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it'll build you or bite you, whatever you want to do.
Yeah. So I'm curious then, in your office, you've got these incoming leads. How have you structured your office to handle those leads?
So a couple things. We have, you know, if it's after hours, we have an answering service, obviously handles all those. For all the bandit signs, we have those go directly off-site to a anonymous phone call, if you will.
Yep.
They answer the phone. So, but anything that's on our regular main advertising number, that rings into our main desk. I have a woman that sits at the main desk, and Dee answers the phone, and she has a series of questions that she asks people. If she doesn't get a hold of them, she calls them back, whatever. But she goes through and pre-screens them. You know, about half of them we have to throw out before they even get to our acquisitions team. You know, mm-hmm. it's already listed, it's full price, it's fully renovated. They just want to have $1 million for a house that's worth $50. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So we know out of the gates if it's worth even pursuing. So about half those leads get thrown out at the gate. Then it goes to our acquisitions team. Now, our acquisitions team, they turn around and they go through another pre-screening process, and they try to set an appointment, you know, and meet with the people, do a presentation, let them know who we are, and give them a cash offer if it's something we want to work with. Now, we wholesale, we, you know, buy and flip, and then we buy and hold. So we determine in the office what is the best exit strategy, and then we go from there. So my team, it kind of handles that from start to finish.
Your acquisition team, do you always set an appointment and try to meet with them in person?
My acquisitions team,
yes.
they will determine that based on the phone call.
Okay.
You know, they want to determine does the lead have a good chance or any chance? You know what I mean? Or did they come through, they slip through the cracks and they really have no intention, or are they mortgaged up to their chin?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And really, I don't mess around too much with short sales and that kind of stuff. It just doesn't really fit in my business model. I've certainly done them, but I'm just not a big fan.
Yep.
So if they're really maxed out, we try and find deals that have equity. We do well with wholesales of junk properties, believe it or not. We bought houses for $1 and sold them for $20,000, and we've had a number of deals like that. So that's, you know, those are nice too.
So that's another good question, because we're very much the same way. I mean, we get a lead in and we might want to buy it and turnkey it. We might want to retail it. We might want to wholesale it. We might want to buy and hold it. What's sort of your grid to decide whether you're going to keep it, wholesale it, or retail it?
You know, I think it comes down to area and profitability. We want to turn our money, right? As investors, we want to turn our money fast, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, when you wholesale, you're not turning any money. So that's kind of my accountant says, we really don't, you don't really buy these and you make money on them. So there's really no basis for profit. It's like unlimited. I go, yeah, I know.
So, that's right. Yeah.
It's not a bad gig.
Yeah.
So, you know, I used to, in my first several years, I threw out any lead I wasn't going to buy and flip because I didn't really know what wholesaling was and didn't want to do it. And then one day I said, what am I doing? Just because I don't want this in a certain area doesn't mean another investor wouldn't want it.
Right.
And that's kind of how we grew our wholesaling business. So we look at a house when it comes in. We have what's called a PBR. It's our project budget report. And we run it through there and we determine what the profitability is. We try and shoot for a 20% gross profit margin. Mm-hmm. I know every region is different. I know that out west, some of those margins are probably 8 to 10. Maybe in the larger markets for you, it's the same way. I don't know.
Yeah, we're about the same. Yeah, we shoot for 20%.
Yep. So we shoot for 20%. And, you know, obviously we don't always make that. We certainly try. but it's you know, a lot of factors have to come into play. So that, so if we can do that, we'll go ahead and flip it. If we get it cheap enough, a lot of times the wholesale properties, to me, they're properties I don't want to mess with. You know, they're maybe in the inner city. They're not in great locations. They could be bug infested. They could be burned. Yep. They could be something. I just, you know, we've done the major renovations, and over time I've gotten so I don't love the major, you know, major problems. You know what I mean?
Yep.
If I can buy that cheap and sell it to someone that wants to jump in and have all the headaches, God bless you. You know? Yep. And, you know, sometimes you wholesale, you can make more doing it that way than you can doing the renovation. Oh, you know what I mean?
It's great. That's the thing. If you can make a quick 5 to 10 versus 20 with a lot of headache and a lot of risk, man, I'll take the 5 to 10 all day long.
I tell you, we have a unique method too. I'll tell you, Ken, we actually buy and actually sell. Now, I know people do assignments and that kind of stuff, but in our world, what we like that makes us feel like we're doing it the right way for us and for our area, and plus it makes my attorney happy, is that we literally buy and sell. So we get you under, you know, you have a house, you call me, and we get you under contract for, let's say, $5,000 or $10,000 or whatever the number is. Let's call it 10. And we actually go ahead and get you under contract. And the contract says, we're going to buy your house for $10,000, but I have an addendum that says, I don't have to execute this contract until I find a third-party buyer. At no cost to you, I'm going to go find a buyer. And I said the fee's going to come out of the end buyer. So we go out and market that house. We have permission to put it on the MLS and to do what we have to do to market that house, to try and get as many potential buyers to look at it as possible. So we go above and beyond just building a list. Does that make sense?
Yep, totally.
So then we market it online, and, you know, obviously we're trying to get the bidder. Now, we pay any commissions that are due or whatever it might be. We'll make a flat rate commission of $1,000, let's say, if it's a smaller property. And we'll go out and try and sell that house. Now, when we do that, so then we create the spread, we call it. And my sales team gets paid a percentage of the spread that they create. So even when we get something under contract, we're not scared to go back to the seller and say, look, to make this work, I need to have you take $5,000. And go back to the seller and say, to make this work, you've got to pay $25,000. You know, we try and maximize that spread as best we can, because let's face it, we're investors. We're trying to buy low and sell high. That's the name of the game. That's what you do when you're buying stocks, or if you're flipping cars, or you're flipping houses. It's the same thing. So we do that, and then we go to the closing table, and it all happens in the same day. And we use the end buyer's money to do it, and our attorney does the paperwork, and away we go. So we've done deals, like I said, we've done deals where we haven't made any money because that didn't work out so good. Only a couple of those. But then we did a deal this about 4 or 5 months ago where we bought a house for, gosh, I think $10,000, and sold it for $58,000 or $68,000. It was like $48,000 split. Yeah, right. That, you know, we've had several in the high, you know, in the mid-20s, that kind of stuff. And the people are thrilled because they get rid of their house. They got rid of a headache that they didn't want. They were losing money. It was costing money. It was burned down. They were getting code violations. You know what I mean? They had problems, and we took care of that problem. And they don't really care. They don't know what we make, number one. They didn't really have to research it. But even still, they got what they wanted, and the end buyer got what they wanted, and we made the deal happen. So we get paid for that.
Yeah. At the end of the day, as long as it's a win-win, you know, that you're the seller that sold to you feels good about, you know, what they sold it for, and there's some motivation there. So they, you know, they maybe got rid of a problem or a headache, and they were able to move on to what they moved on. They don't care what you do with the house after that.
It's funny. Yeah, I can think of a house that was a few years ago. A guy called up, and it was a real nice area, and he wanted to sell this house for, I don't remember the number, let's just say it was $80,000. And I knew we could turn around and sell that house without touching it for like $160,000. And I actually went and met with him myself. So one of my team was there, and she was kind of new, and I wanted to make sure that things were on the up and up, and this guy was sane. You know, because I went to him, and I didn't go to him and say, hey, we can pay you more. I just said, look, you know, you want $80,000 for the house, and then we're willing to pay you that. I just want to know why. And he said, well, because I'm 60-some years old. He said, I'm recently divorced after 40 years. He said, I just want to move on, and I don't want to jerk around with it. He said, I'm good with it. I looked him in the eye and said, got yourself a deal. Shook his hand, and I realized that he just wanted to get out and didn't care. You know, it's not always about the money.
Yeah, totally.
You know, so that was a good experience. We turned around and sold that house for $150,000 and put, I don't know, $40,000-$50,000 in our pocket, and all we did was sell it. So
in your market, then, are you always doing double closings? Are you ever assigning contracts?
I don't. Now, okay. I've bought several over the years from wholesalers that bring deals to me, but we always do double closings. Yeah, that just seems to work. It just seems to work in our world. It is a little more expensive, but also we're not disclosing what we're making, so we can definitely increase that spread.
That's true. Yeah, that's funny, because some of the guys that I work with, some of our agents that work for us, if there's a big spread there, they're like, we'll go ahead and spend a little bit extra to do the double close so that my end buyer doesn't get pissed off and see how much money I'm making.
Yeah, you know, let's be honest. All of us, we're all the same way. And Ken, we're just meeting, but I'm guessing we're probably the same way. We're all about making some good money. But if someone's making a ton of money, we're thinking, wait a minute, I want to buy it for cheaper. Yeah. It just seems to be natural reaction, right? We all do it. So we just try and keep ourselves, you know, protected from that on a regular basis. So.
Yeah, you know, it's good. And I buy properties from wholesalers here locally. If they bring me a good deal and my numbers work, then, you know, whatever. But sometimes even still, the numbers are good. I'm happy they're making money, but they'll send over that assignment and they're making 15 grand. I'm like, what?
Yeah, right. I know, right? It was a good deal until you saw their numbers, right?
Exactly. It really shouldn't matter, but there's a rub there for some reason.
We all do that, right? Isn't that funny? Where I'm almost like, I wish I didn't even know.
Exactly. I'd have been super happy if I just didn't know, but now you sort of ruined my day.
I hear you. Oh, man.
Oh, so, Glenn, you've done a lot of really cool, interesting deals, it sounds like, up there. Is there one deal in your mind that stands out as, like, your best deal ever?
Gosh, we've done a lot of cool things. So there's one that I'm thinking about that was the most financially rewarding, and that was pretty cool. It was a few years ago, and we bought a house that an agent brought me before it was on our MLS. Let me explain. There's a couple different MLSs in different counties around here. And for some reason, the bank didn't like the local MLS company that we use, which is a pretty popular one, but they didn't want to use it. They wanted to put it on some other MLS that was literally 45 miles away. Hmm. Right. So strange. So they put the house on there, and this agent called me and said, hey, this agent called me and wants to know if you have any local buyers in this area. Go check it out. So I pull in. And it's beautiful. I mean, it's run down and looked terrible, but I could see that it was beautiful. It was on 3 acres of land in a town that has really high resales. And it was a 3,000 square foot home on 3 acres. It was the road was actually Foster Ave or Foster PR, private road, because you drove on this road and it dead ended into your garage. And so we pulled in and went, wow, we almost thought we could live there ourselves. So the pool was so grown over that I was almost stepping on the cover before I realized I was in a pool. Yikes. It was that grown up. You've seen those, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so we buy the house, and we bought, let's say it was around $125,000, something like that. I get to the attorney. We're getting ready for closing, and she says, now, so this house sits on 7 acres. I said,
what?
Say again? And she said, I said, no, I think it's 3. She goes, no, you got another plot here. You have 7 acres, 7 point something. I said, really? So I buy the house. We do the renovation. I want to say, I don't have the numbers in front of me, Ken, but the numbers were, we paid $125,000 for the house. We probably put $80,000 into the house or maybe $100,000 into the house for renovations. We sold, then we subdivided the land into two additional building lots. Oh, wow. We sold the house for like $387,000. So we made over around $100,000 on the house, I think, or maybe a little under $80,000 or $100,000 on the house. And then we subdivided the land, sold one to a contractor for $42,000 or $43,000 to build a new house. Then we sold the other piece of land to the guy who bought the house from us. I just may have mentioned that, you know, if he didn't buy it, I might build a house right in his front yard. So, you know, I may have mentioned that, Ken. I may have said that a couple of times. So.
Right. And casually, in passing.
You know, it just may have come up. So so we sold that lot for like $60,000 to him. Oh my gosh. And at the end of the day, I think we made like $220,000 or something like that on that deal. And it was a pretty cool deal. I mean, at the end of the day, it was pretty cool how it all, we didn't get one check at the time, but over the course of 6 months, it was pretty awesome. You know,
that's ridiculous, man.
That was pretty cool. It was a pleasant surprise without any question.
Percentage wise too. I mean, to be in a house for 200 and then make another 200 on top of that, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, right. Sometimes people have asked me about those deals. I'm like, they don't happen every day, but if you're not in the game swinging the bat, you're never going to get one.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But you got to be in the game. So.
Exactly. And that's why you're talking about today as your best deal ever. Cause it's not every deal that comes across, but I mean, occasionally that's the thing. It's you stay at this, you do enough of it. Even if you're hitting base hits, eventually you're going to get a triple or a home run.
Oh yeah,
it's just staying at it.
It's just like baseball for sure. Hey, I wanted to add something if you don't mind.
Yeah, man.
You know the importance of once you get past yourself, right? So once you get past just you flipping, it's important to start to create systems in your business, right? Mm-hmm. And here's what I want to tell you: life can turn on a dime. And you know, I wish I had some pictures to visualize this, but last year, my it was in March. Well, we were getting ready to go on a trip to Costa Rica with our four kids. We have four kids. We have we're 16 years old all the way down to 5 months. But I'll tell you the story. There was three kids at the time. My wife was pregnant, and her water broke at 22 and a half weeks. So guys who don't know what weeks is, that's really not good. And so we spent the next few days in the hospital where they said, your baby is probably going to come out and not make it. And it was a really, really crappy time. And so my wife was hospitalized that night. I mean, instantly, I became a stay-at-home dad overnight. And my wife was in the hospital for 6 weeks. And it was about a half an hour drive one way to the hospital. I have three kids and I have a business to run. Around that time, I went to my team and I said, ladies, my life's going to, be about my family right now. I need you to continue on. You know, with everything you've learned here, I want you to continue on and take over. I said, I want you to run the ship because I've got to take care of my family. So my son is born. 6 weeks later, he's born at 28 weeks. He's a full 3 months early. He's 2 pounds at birth, and he's born. It's not good. They tell us that day after 3 hours of waiting that my son probably wasn't going to make it. And it was a horrible day. And so, we had to fight through a lot of emotions. I can't even talk about it. It's still kind of fresh in my mind. So my son remains in the NICU of Albany Med. That's the big hospital here for 87 days. So my wife's in for 6 weeks. Then for 87 days, almost 3 full months later, we're going back and forth to the hospital every single day. And, trying to balance this in a business and all that kind of stuff. Now, the good news is he's home. He's doing great. Wow. He's a little boy now. He's awesome. 5 months, but he's acting like a 2-month-old because that's where he is in his actual age. And so it was a scary time. It was the hardest thing I've ever had to go through in my life, the scariest, the most helpless I ever felt. What I want to say about business is that because we built a solid business system, my team bought something like 25 houses during that time. Wow. And they were rocking and rolling. Many houses I hadn't seen, which was the first time that had happened. I won't lie, while Amber was in the hospital, there was a time or two that I would sneak in a carpet sample or sneak in a wood floor sample or whatever for her to choose from. What I mean? But we did what we had to do. But because we had a good business system in place, we still continued on. And though that took 6 months of our life this year, we are still in a position where we're gonna beat our numbers from last year. We'll be over 70 renovations, I think, or 70 purchases this year. And if we hadn't had that system in place, it wouldn't have happened. So I think that's, just huge. As people are thinking about building, that's an important piece.
Huge testament to building systems. And man,
yeah.
Praise God that your wife and your son.
Yeah, you got that right, man.
Came out on the other end.
It was a long, long, hard year. But I tell you, you put your gladiator helmet on and you go. And you just do what you got to do. And it's been harder to look back and talk about it than it was to live through it. But pretty amazing. But I wanted to just share that with you so you know about the power of systems and how if your business runs – and if you can have your business still running when you have a life punch in the face, you can still survive.
Yep.
That's
a really, really good reminder. It really is remind us of why we do what we do. We work not just to make money. We work for our family. And so that we do have more time with them. And when life, gives you lemons, you have an opportunity to just stop what you're doing and spend time with them and hope your business continues to run and continues to provide.
Absolutely.
Glenn, thanks so much for sharing, man. That was amazing. So if people want to find out more about your business and how they could even plug in Albany if they wanted to, where would we send them?
Yeah, I'd say go right to our website. We're building a new website, but for now you can go to the website we have. It's www.signaturehomebuyers.com as an S on the end of buyers. So signaturehomebuyers.com. And you can also reach me at Glenn with two N's at signaturehomebuyers.com. Happy to help or talk or encourage someone along or whatever we can do to help.
Glenn, this was fantastic. Folks, we're going to put this up on the show notes as well, signaturehomebuyers.com. We'll put his email there if you feel like reaching out to him directly. Glenn, thanks so much for coming on the show. This is great.
Got it. Thanks, Ken.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Hey, Deal Farm Podcast listeners, this is Ken Corsini reminding you that the name of this podcast is Deal Farm for a reason. Because I want to help you do more real estate deals. If you're looking to buy a deal in a certain market, let me know about it. I've got contacts all around the country. If you're just looking for hard money or private lending, I do a lot of private lending and would be more than happy to work with you. If you're looking to partner on a deal, maybe it's your first deal or second deal and you need a little help, I partner with people all the time. Whatever it is you're looking for to fill in the gap to get started in real estate investing, I can probably help. And if I can't, I'll point you in the right direction. Again, I'm here to help you become successful in real estate. Go to our website, dealfarm.net, onto the Contact Us page. That'll go directly to my inbox. I will reach back out to you, set up a time to talk, and I'll do whatever I can to make you a success. Thanks again for listening to The Deal Farm. We will see you on the next episode. Take care.